time has come and I've chosen a new co-regional manager. Well, I guess maybe they chose me. I'm not quite sure how the choosing went, but there was a choice that was made. And through all of our amazing applicants that have come on and helped me out and filled in the gaps and recorded episodes with me, I love and thank all of them. All of you people were fantastic and great. If you're listening, I don't know if you still listen or you just kind of dipped in for an interview and then you ghosted. I don't know what went on. But one of you stuck around and that person is Stephen Hackett. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, Tiff.
Hi, welcome to the team. You filled out all your W-2s, right?
I did.
Yeah.
I built an office where we're like behind Creed's desk, awkwardly in the middle of the floor. So I'm in there now.
Nice, nice. Have your own office. It's good. Mm-hmm. Do you have like all your desk stuff out? Like what's out on your desk?
Yeah, I actually am very much a person who has stuff out on their desk. Like I've got Lego sets and I've got a bell because I'm a tech podcaster and Hot Wheels cars and like a coffee mug full of pens. I got like, it's a problem. I like knickknacks.
That's nice. That's awesome. I have a black light flashlight for some reason. I don't know why I have that, but
well,
it's here.
If you throw a party with Dwight, you can see what's all over the bed.
Oh, yeah. Don't. Oh, no.
I screamed the first time I saw that scene. I was like, oh, no.
I think about that scene every time I'm in a hotel room now, and it's a little disturbing.
It is. No, I'm super glad to be here. I'm really looking forward to this, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
So what do you think? Are you going to be big picture or are you going to be day to day?
Oh, I'm totally the day to day person. Like I'm in the details.
So okay.
I'll let you big picture blue sky it.
I'm good at big picture blue sky. That's totally me.
We're a good team.
Perfect. High five. Ding. Ding. All right. Let's get into this episode. We're talking about episode 8 of season 5, and that's Business Trip. Michael is very excited about his international excursion that David Wallace is sending him on.
International to Winnipeg in the winter.
I love how it opens up and you think he's going somewhere like pretty exotic or different, just the way he is addressing all the different cultures, which I think if this were aired today, this scene would have been cut quickly.
The cold open with Meredith, there's no way. It's pretty rough. You know, he makes her cover her face and says something terrible.
Meredith, I would like you to pretend that you are from Abu Dhabi.
Hello.
I am ashamed at your naked face. I must cover it with my jacket. You are now sexy in your culture.
That jumped out at me. There were definitely parts of this show that like they couldn't do today, and this is on that short list for sure.
I do love how he goes through all of the things that he thinks are international.
I have always been intrigued by all things international. The women, the pancakes, the man of mystery.
He loves travel, right? Like when he gets to go to the convention that we just talked about, the hotel room, remember how excited he is about that? And now he gets to do this, and it's even more exciting because it's international. No offense to Winnipeg, but it doesn't seem like it's that exotic of a location, to your point. It's one of those scenes, too, because we cut to David Wallace, and he's saying, you know, he wanted to do something to cheer Michael up after they had to transfer Holly. And then he also says it's really hard to get somebody to go there in the winter.
I was happy to send Michael on this trip. He's been feeling pretty down since we had to transfer Holly up to New Hampshire. But this little perk really seemed to turn him around. And it's pretty tough to find somebody who wants to go up to Winnipeg mid-November.
I like David Wallace a lot. He's one of my favorite characters. And I really like that he is paternal in a sense to Michael. And Michael, I think, is unaware of this, but he's in Michael's corner most of the time. And I like that Michael has somebody who's got his back, even if it is to, you know, ultimately a business relationship. There's something between them that I find really, really nice.
Yeah, I see that too. David Wallace, he's a little protective of Michael because he knows that Michael's capable of performing in a business sense where he will be competent, he will get the sales. And I think a lot of other people that would come across Michael wouldn't know that. And Wallace knows that. So he lets that shine through despite Michael's shortcomings in the social atmosphere.
Yeah, he sees what we as the audience see sometimes, is that, including this episode, right, Michael closes a big deal. Michael's good at his job. It's just the rest of the social stuff sort of makes that difficult to focus on at times.
I like during the interview with Wallace, it's kind of echoey, and it shows like the camera wasn't quite set up to take his interview. They have those little flaws throughout the show that bring you back to reality and make you remember, oh, this is kind of like a mockumentary style. They don't make it perfect every time. And I love that they still have those small flaws, even, you know, five seasons in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sometimes wonder if that is by design, or like they really did sort of just botch the audio and decided to live with it. Like, we'll never know. But as someone who, I mean, as a production person, like, I just wonder what happened there.
I mean, you would think that you would hear it while you're recording, right? You'd be like, oh, wow, this is a big echo. And then maybe someone's just like, just leave it.
It's fine.
It is what it is. We're low budget, quote unquote.
Right.
But Michael he brings his two empty suitcases. There's so many funny things that go around Michael traveling. And even though it seems like he never leaves Scranton, like you said, he absolutely loves the idea of traveling and souvenirs. And he's excited about the hotel. And he's like thrilled about the idea of a concierge. Like, it's just, he's so into it. It's adorable.
It is nice. You know, Michael Scott really enjoys being treated as if he's special. And what's more special than like a special assignment from the boss?
And he loves being special in first class. He rubs it in big time.
Welcome to Cribs, the business class edition. Check this out. Mimosa.
Oh,
handed
sweet.
It to me as I sat down. This was my hot towel. It is still wet.
Even though he doesn't get a meal because it's a short flight, apparently, for Michael.
But also, Oscar and Andy end up going with him on this trip. I guess Andy because he speaks French and Oscar because numbers. I don't know. It's really not super clear why they're around.
Yeah, I don't know.
But Oscar brings an egg salad sandwich on the plane. And I have to agree with Michael. That is horrible. Like, what kind of a monster brings such stinky food onto a plane? I 100% agree with him.
I made egg salad sandwiches. Do you want one? Could you have picked something stinkier to bring on a plane? My God, Oscar, really? Do you have a bag of baby poop in there, too, to share with everybody?
Bad move, Oscar. What are you doing? I also like that Michael, when he's talking to them, is like, I have this portable DVD player. He's like, oh, yeah, Andy brought one, too. It's like, oh, right. It's not so special.
So we kind of have, like, the A plot of Michael traveling to Canada. So kind of the B plot is Ryan and Kelly back at the office. And Ryan, I hate Ryan.
I do too.
He's just, he's the embodiment of every bad guy, you know, like he just, I can't even put into words how crazy he makes me. But he's trying to get Kelly back because he doesn't have her. And it's just so problematic.
Yeah, she's been with Daryl for a while now, and Ryan, I think, only wants her because, like you said, he doesn't have her. And I'm putting that in quotes because that's a terrible way to talk about human beings. But she's with somebody else, and he just wants back in the game. And we see this play out where, right, they say, you know, I'm going to be coming back here because he's been filling in for Pam, and he does that ridiculous scene where he's doing like push-ups to impress her, and then. And the physical humor of this is really good, where he tries to do one-handed push-ups and, like, kind of does it, but then also sort of fails at it, like how anybody would try a one-handed push-up, you know, trying to impress somebody. It's like, you're not really strong enough for that, but I guess you tried, so.
And he looks ridiculous doing it in his business attire.
Oh, it's so awkward.
This looks like where I'll probably do my push-ups every day.
Is that supposed to impress me?
It is. It's pretty painful, but it seems to work on her because next time we see them, she's just all over him in her nook, you know, just
that's what she said.
family show, Tiff.
No, it's not. hey, the rule is that now that you're new, I can brief you on this. The rule is if they talk about it in the show, you can talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah, so they're making out back there.
They are.
And that is seemingly going on a couple of times because we see it again where they're like behind the vending machines, which, look, I mean, I'm not an expert on office romance, but it seems like trying to make out behind a vending machine is just not a great choice. Like, it's a pretty public space. And also, who wants to be behind a vending machine? Like,
in between, like, a plant and the wall.
Yeah, right. So, like, we've all done this, right? Where, like, the one time a year you move, like, that heavy dresser to dust behind it. And it's like, look at all the crap back here. I mean,
I thought you were going a completely different direction with that, because you're like making about behind a vending machine. We've all done this.
Yeah, who hasn't? But it is, it's definitely awkward. And then it comes out that he has taken her phone and has pre-written a text for her to break up with Daryl.
This can't happen again.
This has to happen again. Daryl can't happen again. Look at me. Do you want me to do more push-ups?
Yeah.
Okay, you have to break up with Daryl. I already typed out a text message for you.
I mean, he's so manipulative. He says it, but it's like, oh, you've got to send it. Like, it's got to come from you, even though he wrote it.
All you have to do is press send.
I don't know. I mean, it's well written and all. It just
has to be done.
Oh, and then he's like, we'll send it together. Like, trying to make it romantic.
He's such a dirtbag.
Oh, but that's, I think that that's why his character is written like that. It is. It's just, it's taking and distilling down all of those qualities and putting them into Ryan. And it's just like, but yet people do that, you know, people talk mm-hmm. like that, and other people fall for it, and it's putting it right there. And it's like, almost like you can always see someone else's problems when you're removed from it. But when you're involved in it, you don't really see what's going on clearly. This is how we're all watching Ryan, is that we see the train wreck that is Ryan and Kelly and how he treats her and how she lets him treat her. And we all see it's horrible, but we know that the two of them are so in it together that they don't see it at all.
It's so painfully obvious to anybody else.
He said it's cool.
That's all he wrote?
It's all I wrote.
Can I see it? Mm-hmm. Didn't you two date for like a long time?
Mm-hmm. This is like a fairy tale.
The other bit of physical humor in this episode that really jumped out at me was when we see Daryl after she breaks up with him.
Yes.
We don't see his face. It's kind of a far shot. But you can tell he's so happy as he's like bebopping out to his truck, just like apparently just leaving in the middle of the day in celebration, probably to go get a drink, that he is done with Kelly.
His strut is just like that little gif of the proud little boy, like dancing with his elbows up, like the way he's strutting out to his truck. That's such a good little moment. And it's one of those things, if you're not looking at the screen at those few seconds, you totally miss it. And it is one of my favorite views of Daryl, because it is, it's low, it's far away, it's a little hazy. It's a really good shot.
It is. It's so good.
The other thing that's going on in the office is the rumor mill has started, as it tends to start all the time in the office. And somehow everyone knows everyone else's business. And the business everyone is attached to right now is what's going on with Pam. And they're all kind of patting Jim on the back. And they know that Pam is about to come home in like less than a week.
Pam comes back from New York next week. And everyone here has just been so excited for me and involved. And intrusive and weird.
They're all kind of excited for Jim, but in a really weird, inappropriate way.
It's creepy, right? It's like you almost expect Kevin to like come by and like sit a condom on his desk and be like, she's coming back.
Exactly.
Because right? Kevin is so uncomfortable in those situations. It's like, it's very upsetting. It's just very strange.
Well, Kevin has no game, but he has no problem like talking about other people. It's almost like, so we're watching Cheers right now, and it's like watching the Sam Malone get all the girls, and the guys at the bar are just like, you know, rooting them on. That's what's happening in this scene. It's like everyone is rooting on Jim, but he's the one that's actually, you know, and it's so disconnected and strange. It's almost like they're all watching a sporting event, but it's Jim's life.
It's upsetting.
But we should just like go into it. Pam calls up Jim and reveals that she is failing one of her classes.
Are you sure?
I just talked to my advisor. Failing.
Wow. I thought you were good at Flash.
I was. And then they switched to Acrobat just as I was learning Quark. I hate computers.
This is a big thing because Pam's already been away for 3 months now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And this would mean another 3 more months for her to make up this class.
I wrote down the quote because I did. So I did art school for 2 years, and then I graduated with a journalism degree, but with a focus on design. And her quote to Jim about what's going on there is, he says, I thought you were good at Flash. She says, I was. And they switched to Acrobat as I was learning Quark. That's a nonsense sentence. Like, those three things don't have anything to do with each other. But I can feel empathy for Pam for learning Quark Express, because now no one uses it. And it's like a skill that I have that is effectively useless. But she's struggling, clearly. And I think for her, it's bigger than just this class, because in a way, it puts a damper on everything she's been doing for the last 3 months, going to New York, doing this program. And I think she feels like the whole thing has been a failure, even though it may just be this one class. And I think we've all been there, right? Where, like, you're working on something big and then part of it goes wrong and it sort of sours the whole thing. Like, we've all felt that disappointment. Mm-hmm. And it's a very real moment for her character that she's alone. She has failed at this, and she not only has to deal with that, but she knows she's going to have to deal with it in public to a degree, because she's stepped out of her normal life to do it, right? Everyone's going to know how it went. And that's a hard thing, and I think they play it really well.
Not only is it in public, but it's very much in public because of the filming of the show, The Existence Anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's even more public, right? Like, she put herself out there. If you think about it in terms of, she knows she's being filmed, and she still went out and did this big thing and took this giant risk. And now she has to admit that she's failing part of it publicly, like really publicly. That's really difficult. And you can see it in that she's teary eyed. You know, she's very emotional when she's talking to Jim on the phone. I like the way they have the two camera shots of, like, they're showing her in New York and he's back in the office. And the part of it that really stood out to me was the way Jim is so supportive. You know, he says all the right things, and he's so incredibly selfless when it comes to this, because she's upset about having to go 3 more months. Can we take 3 more months of this? And he comes back and he says, it's not about me. This is your dream. And when you come back the right way.
I mean, this is your dream. And you went to New York to do this. So when you come back the right way, right?
He doesn't think of her and their partnership as him and her to get, like, it's not a ownership. It's not a, he wants her to be all that she can be and all that she wants to be. And he's happy to be there with her. Mm-hmm. And that's how he always supports her. And it's so great, because he doesn't lay on the guilt. He doesn't even, it's a really selfless, wonderful way to support your partner. And I love seeing them like that.
It's a real contrast to Ryan and Kelly, isn't it? Like, he's Ooh. Doing the opposite. And we see one relationship, they're both sort of struggling in their own way, but Ryan and Jim can be more different in how they're handling things. And it's maybe even more impactful, because the previous episode, we see Pam's art school friend, you know, try to talk her into staying in New York. And, like, Jim, you know, it's that scene we talked about last time. Mm-hmm. This is on the heels of that. And so he's saying, you need to do this the right way, even though he knows that they're going to be not only away for another 3 months, but she's still going to be in that environment with that friend who has expressed this. And he doesn't seem concerned about that. He's concerned about her. And I think that makes it even, like, more powerful that he says what he says.
It's kind of like the whole, if you love something, set it free.
Yeah. If you love something, send them to art school.
Yep. That's true.
That's what the song says.
It's exactly what the song says. Actually, I might have missed that lyric. But yeah, it's another wonderful testament to Jim and Pam's relationship. And I love the way you contrasted that with Kelly and Ryan. And I think the show does that often, where they'll give us a view of the way one group of people handle something, and then they contrast that with the way another group of people handle something. And it kind of makes that flow of, like, look at all these different people, different ways to do things, different ways to address situations. And that's what brings this show so close to that human experience, because everyone can understand the different parts of all those different groups.
Absolutely.
So I want to go to Canada with Michael.
Who doesn't?
I mean, they go and they get to the hotel, and as Wallace suggested, they go and check out the concierge, and we meet a fantastic character, Concierge Marie.
It's so uncomfortable.
What? Why? Why?
I mean, he definitely thinks she's a prostitute, right? Like,
no.
No, there's something like
he does call her a geisha at one point.
That's true.
A concierge is the Winnipeg equivalent of a geisha. This is a woman who has been trained in the fine art of fanciness and pleasure. And when you meet one, it is intoxicating.
But it feels like there's something weird about this. And maybe it's just that he's swept away in the fanciness of Winnipeg, but like, I don't know. Like, I've always watched their interaction as like I feel like he just doesn't understand her role in a way that I find sort of strange.
Oh no, I've never thought of it that way, and now I'm going to.
I don't want to like spoil your mind palace, but
no, it's just a different. It's okay. I thought that he was just impressed that like the fanciness of a hotel to have a concierge, which sounds super fancy because it's like kind of French sounding, and you know, like he's all swept up in it, and then he is. I don't want to use the word using, because it's not using, but he's still so hung up on Holly based on how many things he says. Obviously, he just like left her. So obviously she's still constantly on his mind, and he's still mourning that relationship. But I guess Concierge Marie is kind of like a rebound, or I don't even want to say a rebound because it doesn't last. It's more of a distraction. That's the word.
Okay.
Distraction. I don't see him treating her like a prostitute.
Maybe I went too far with that. I don't know.
I think he would have come on to her a little bit grosser. I saw their small courtship or his flirting as pretty reasonable. I was going to say he kind of had game, the way he like gave her the little quizzes of like, where do I get my dry cleaning done?
Yeah, but they did that in the bar that she mentioned, and like they went to find her, assumedly, or maybe it was the only bar they knew. I don't know. Like, that's really the thing.
Is
like,
it is the bar she suggested, and she happened to be there.
Yeah.
She could have said no thank you and like walked away.
That's true. I don't know. It is funny. I do like their conversations in the bar where he's quizzing her, and he is genuinely impressed, right? Like in his very Michael Scott way of like, he can get his mind blown pretty easily. And I think she has done that with her knowledge of the greater Winnipeg area, which honestly, like, who hasn't been impressed by that?
How about this one? It's Christmas Eve and everything is closed and you need to get some dry cleaning done. 12 o'clock, midnight. Where do you go? What do you do? What do you do? Come on. What do you do?
Astro Cleaners on St. James Place is the only place that is open on that day.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
According to Dunderpedia, all of those things are false, though.
I've read that. It's so disappointing.
There is no sushi restaurant. There's no pub. There's no financial district. Like, it's not even called the financial district. Yeah, everything is wrong. And the 17 number 17 bus runs until 1 a.m., not 9 p.m.
Come on, office writers.
I know. Come on.
I mean, maybe they had issues getting the names, the rights to the names or something, but it feels like that sort of thing should be correct. I like it in shows when those things end up being correct.
Yeah, because in Scranton, they try, except for the Chili's. There was never a Chili's in Scranton, but they try a little bit of some of the things, like Poor Richard's, I think, is actually there and those kind of things. But yeah, they got Winnipeg all wrong.
We also need to talk about Andy's game on behalf of Oscar.
I'm your wingman.
He has an amazing quote. So they're in the bar. Andy is trying to, in his words to Angela, get other dudes laid.
Because he has to be good, right?
He has to be good, which...
problematic.
Because Angela. Yeah. And he tries to get, quote, a slab of hot Canadian bacon for Oscar.
Engaging wings.
Probably going to leave after one drink. Let's do this.
Yeah, with a hot slab of Canadian bacon in your hand.
My word, what a quote. I have very, as we will learn as we go forward, I have very complicated feelings about the Andy Bernard character. Mm-hmm. Like, I like a lot of his personality, but a lot of personality I really dislike.
Yep.
But this is a side of Andy that I really do like, that he is genuinely trying to help a guy in the office with his personal life, but in doing so they become friends. And I like this little arc over the course of, you know, what seems to be only a couple of days, maybe just 2 days, of Andy and Oscar not really knowing each other, They go through this experience. Andy sort of over wingmans it. He wingmans too hard. But then they drink together and become friends. And I like that arc because they're a pair of office characters that we don't see very often together. Mm-hmm. And later their relationship becomes more complicated because Andy becomes the boss. And then, you know, all the stuff with Andy and Angela happens. And Oscar is sort of there in the middle of that to a degree and then help pick up the pieces of Angela's life later. So like they are connected and this is sort of the beginning of all of that. But yeah, that Canadian bacon line every time gets me. It's really funny.
I think it kind of sums it all up when Andy, after their drunken night together, Andy has a confessional and he says,
I had to go all the way to Canada to get to know a guy who sits 20 feet away from me. And he's delightful.
They shake hands in the airport. It's good.
It is really good. But they drunk call Angela, which is a big plot point. And who do we hear on the other side of the phone during this phone call?
O.D.
O.D.
Are you drunk?
This is Andy Bernard.
I know who this is.
I want to take you to sex school.
What?
Who is that monkey?
Is somebody there?
Are you drunk?
Who is that monkey?
Oh, man. It's so funny because Oscar has known Angela a long time. He knows how she is. She can be very cold, very tightly wound. And
perfect way to put it.
And drunk Andy admits that they don't have a physical relationship. And Oscar finds that both easy and hard to believe at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they call her and they interrupt an evening with Dwight. It's really awkward. But them being drunk sort of softens the blow. Like it doesn't register really. And he doesn't even remember the next morning that there was a call. And this detail of someone else being there is sort of dropped for the time being. And you know, that's hard to watch as the audience because you know, Andy is being played and that's hard to see, right? Like as goofy as he is, you want to root for Andy.
I think that little moment was just for the audience. It was meant for the characters to miss it. And it's one of those it's like dropping the seeds along the way, like anticipating the when is this going to be revealed to the characters themselves, because it keeps getting riskier and riskier mm-hmm. as we see them together. And this is one of the more riskier moments where we hear Dwight's voice and thankfully Andy, well, or maybe not thankfully, but Andy misses it. And it's one of those pretty close calls where he could have heard that.
Yeah.
I do have to say they play an excellent drunk because the way they're talking and the cadence of their voices and they're giggling together. Mm-hmm. I've totally sounded like that. I completely understand. And no, I think they did a great job of playing just the right amount of drunk.
You should call her and ask her. I'd like to know what's wrong with her.
I should call her and ask her. What is wrong with her?
Do it.
It's a caller.
Oh my god, no caller. No caller.
Andy. Too late.
Oh my god.
Too late. It's silent. Now it's ringing.
And Oscar is sort of yelly without yelling. Right? Like,
yes.
Everyone
exactly.
has done that. I would imagine it's really hard to play a drunk person. Like, I mean, I can't act for anything, but I would imagine that's really hard to do. And like, props to both of those actors for doing it because it really is believable. Like it's, oh yeah, like we've all either seen those guys at a bar or we've been those people at a bar, and it's really great. And yeah, it's his face the next morning when Oscar's like, I can't believe we called her, and he's like, wait, what, who?
That was real? I thought I dreamed that. Oh god.
All right.
Oh god.
Okay.
So bad.
That is all just really funny. And we sort of intersect the Michael story back into it at this point. But yeah, it's poor Andy. Poor Andy.
It's like they always say, Long Island iced teas are stronger in Canada.
That, you know, I've heard that.
Yep, that's what they say.
Yeah.
I do want to point on the end of Michael's evening. He ends up going back to Concierge Marie's room.
Does she have a room at work? Like, I'm very confused by this.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know. It was in the hotel.
Is it his room? Does she kick him out of his? Like, I just...
No, I don't think it's his room because he goes somewhere else.
It jumped out at me.
Yeah, it was strange. They just didn't have another set. Yeah. So they're like, hey, we'll stay in the hotel.
I guess.
He kind of, the dialogue that we hear through the door, it's kind of like he's asking her to like go for breakfast and stuff. So another reason why I don't think that he thinks she's a prostitute, like he's trying to form like a little bit of a relationship here. It's like, oh, we just had a night together. Let's, you know, pick this up. Let's go out for breakfast. And she like cold kicks him out. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Like, I see Michael as a sweet person, a little socially awkward, yes, but sweet. And I feel really bad for him in that moment because it's like he's looking for that connection again that he just lost with Holly, and he's getting kicked out of this woman's room. And he keeps bringing up there's so many little things that he says. There was a moment in the bar where he was talking about the idea of dying with people that you like and instead of someone that you love but you can't be with.
Everybody is going to end up dying someday. And I think it's better to die with some people that you like Oscar and Andy and Concierge Marie, than to know that there's somebody out there that you love that you're not with.
It kind of culminates to this phone call he has with Wallace where he starts saying how much he hated the trip, but what it really is how angry he is that Holly got transferred.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I just heard you guys made the sale.
Yeah, we locked him up for 2 years.
Good, very good. See? Told you, sounds like somebody had a good trip.
No, actually the trip sucked.
Excuse me?
The trip sucked, David. It blew chunks. It was terrible.
Let's listen for a second.
No. David, you listen to me. Why do you send her away? That, God, you knew I liked her and you just sent her away. And that was a sucky thing to
Michael,
do, man. That was a really sucky thing to do.
Sometime.
And that just kills me because he takes it out on Wallace, right? And he's angry with him and he's like, how could you do that? And I was actually kind of glad to see Michael stand up like that. To ask him, you know, like, how dare you? How could you? You knew that I liked her. That just breaks my heart.
Yeah, I think that's a great scene. And I like that we don't see the David Wallace side of that one.
Ooh,
that
yeah, that's a good point.
We just see Michael. So, like, we're sort of left to our imagination how Wallace is handling that. But you can imagine, because Michael doesn't really take a break, that he's basically just unloading and hangs up. And that Wallace just takes it. And I think that's probably the right thing to do in that situation if you're a manager.
Yeah. I mean, there really is not much you can do. I mean, Michael's trying to go on with his life, but you can see that he's still carrying the emotional fallout from this relationship and losing this relationship. And it is affecting him underneath, even though he's trying to still like make the sales, be the manager, get excited about this trip, flirt with mm-hmm. another woman, but it's all just so surface. And this episode gives a lot of depth to Michael without it being super obvious. I like it. I like seeing Michael in this way where you can tell he's affected by something emotionally underneath everything, but yet we still get the regular goofy office moments. Mm-hmm. And it's just very well done.
Yeah, for an episode where I don't know, I didn't clock it, but I don't think his storyline has the majority of screen time. I feel like it's shared with the other stories pretty evenly. Mm-hmm. Like it's not a Michael only episode, but his story totally carries this one, and that we see him dealing with continue to deal with the fallout from Holly in a way that is very relatable. And yeah, I like that phone call a lot. I like that David Wallace doesn't seem to interact with it. I like that he hangs up on him. I like that he really kind of lets it rip. And I think that's an appropriate response for anybody. Poor Michael and poor Andy.
I think that's basically the end of the episode, right? One more big thing happens at the very end. Mm-hmm. We see Pam coming back, which is a big surprise because she's just kind of out there waiting in the parking lot. Jim leaves work and he comes out and she's there and she has this big speech to him about how she's coming back the wrong way.
It's not because of you. I don't like graphic design. That's it. Stop smiling. I really didn't like it. It's just designing logos and stuff, and I miss Scranton. But it is not because I missed you. I just really wanted to come home. And I know you said to come home the right way, but you can't tell me what to do. Got it?
I missed you.
I missed you too.
And he can't tell her what to do. I love everything about this scene. Especially that, you know, it's close on them. They share a kiss, and then the camera backs out a touch, and Dwight is just standing there.
He's so close.
You're back.
Yeah.
Good. I need you to make 5 copies of these.
I'm not going inside.
All right. First thing in the morning, then.
The Office is so good at that, of taking a scene and then instantly changing it into something else. And this is a good example of that. Like, oh, this is really a nice reunion moment. Oh, Dwight's there, kind of not being a jerk, but being Dwight. And I always, that always makes me laugh. But yeah, she comes back and she's admitting her failure, and she's admitting that it didn't go the way she wanted it to. But she's also admitting that her life with Jim is more important to her than that. It's a very sweet moment to end the episode.
It is. And I think that if what she was working on, if that was actually important to her, it would have been a different story, mm-hmm. but it wasn't. You could tell that she really weighed her options and thought about it and made a very clear choice. And I like seeing that. And just like you said, with the whole thing with Dwight, The Office has this wonderful way of balancing these very hyper emotional scenes with this just stoic comedy that comes mm-hmm. in and like breaks up the tension. It's so great how Dwight does that. And he comes right back in. But so, yeah, Pam's back the wrong way, and Michael admits how broken he is inside, and Andy questions Angela. Andy and Oscar become friends. A lot of stuff happened in this episode.
The Office episodes that happen either at night or out of the office, you always see more of this inner relationship stuff, and it's a good episode. I like this one.
Is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
I think that about does it. I'm happy to be here. I'm excited to talk about many more episodes with you.
Me too. I can't wait. So thanks everyone for listening, and be sure to go follow us at tall_beats. Subscribe to become a member over at The Incomparable and get fun goodies at the end of the year and access to our members only bonus feed. Are you in there yet? Are you in the bonus conference room Slack?
I will be by the time this goes out.
All right. So you have to get in there and chat with us about The Office. Great links are shared. It's a really nice little group, and it's not too busy, so you don't feel like you're trying to catch up all the time. I know some Slacks feel overwhelming, but this one is just right. So make sure you go over and rate, star, and review us on Apple Podcasts and Overcast and all those places, and come back and join us for the next episode where we talk about Frame Toby.
Mademoiselle, beer me dos Long Island iced teas, s'il vous plaît.
Bad decision in a glass.